ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I'm calling BS on the whole Nick Caserio is going to move on. I don't see why the Texans would wait till May 1st to do it. They've said really nice things about Caserio. I think Casario's done an average job. Like, in most of the what he's, like, acquired is still in the future. Like, the Deshaun Watson trade was the bulk of, like, the most he has brought in, right? Mm-hmm. He had an extra first-round pick last year. He has an extra first-round pick this year. He has an extra first-round pick next year. He inherited a team that immediately had its quarterback demand a trade, inherited a team that was losing a lot of football games, and he hired Cully and Lovey, so that's not a great spot on him. But I think the first 2 years were about tearing it down to its studs and then rebuilding it back up. I think Caserio has the Texans in a decent spot going into his third year and first year with D'Amico. So I don't understand why Caserio would leave that. I don't understand why the Texans would move on from him now as opposed to, you're right, before the whole coaching process. 713, so I'm calling BS. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for Jeffrey. Jeffrey, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Jeffrey?
This is Justin, by the way, but I was going to ask specifically towards, I guess, this brand of football, right? So we're saying Nick Caserio could be on the hot seat, but realistically, we went through a big shift in the style of football recently to this new system, both offensively and defensively. How much of this could be more attributed towards the scouting department as a whole, not necessarily specifically Caserio? And shifting towards guys who know this style of football, guys who have scouted for this style of football, as opposed to the GM getting canned at the end of the year.
I think it makes a lot of sense that of why they would make changes in the scouting department for a new defense, because when you look at last year, they were not on the same page of who they were drafting and what defense they were playing in. The second Derek Stingley Jr. was drafted, everyone knew he didn't fit in Lovie Smith's scheme.
Yeah.
So if you are, for the next 6 years, going to run D'Amico Ryan's defense, Kyle Shanahan's offense through Bobby Slowick, and whoever takes it over next after he goes and gets a head coaching job, hopefully one day, then, yeah, you need to change what your process is. And if you don't believe in the scouts that they can evaluate for that defense, that offense, then you need to change them. But they haven't really been changing in the past. So, like, that's where, like, I'm still even confused is, like, why we're all this stuff is coming about front office changes. Nick Caserio could have made these changes last year. He could have made them the year before. I mean, maybe he's, you know, who was drafted last year that Nick Caserio would say, our scouts got it so wrong? Maybe it's Stingley.
Nah, I mean.
And that's where I kind of.
I was a sauce.
To figure out where they're at.
I was a sauce over Stingley guy. This isn't to pat myself on the back. But whenever the Texans, people were criticizing that I was a fan of sauce over Stingley. Like, it's very easy to do whenever you're like Cincinnati guy, LSU guy. Which of the two would you rather have? Most people want to go with the LSU guy. We're seeing it now with the quarterback position. Ohio State guy, Kentucky guy. Give me the Ohio State guy. So, like, I don't think it was necessarily wrong in the moment. I preferred Sauce over Stingley, but I'm not going to say Caserio. It's too early to grade that pick. It's too early.
Early.
Did Sauce have a better rookie year? Obviously. It's impossible to say otherwise. But you can't grade the pick yet when they're on 4-year contracts, potentially a 5th-year player option as well. So way too early to grade that pick. And I think Stingley was good when he was on the football field. But to your earlier point, he was a scheme misfit. Like, Lovie Smith did not care about cornerbacks in his Cover 2 defense. He went on that Barstool podcast early in the season and said cornerback was his 5th most important defensive position. It's his 5th most important defensive position, yet Nick Caserio's taking him at number 2. Which told
bizarre.
Me... it's not bizarre. It's not bizarre. It's if you can read through the if you can read between the lines
that
a little
pick
bit
was for the organization, not
yes,
for Lovie Smith.
Exactly. Which is why actions speak louder than words. Actions speak way louder than words. Because yeah, we love Lovie. We're gonna have Lovie here forever. We see a long runway with Lovie, blah, 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 blah. The moment they took Stingley at number 2 for a Lovie Smith defense, you had all the actions you needed to know. Lovie Smith was not in their long-term plans. You're not drafting a scheme misfit for Lovie Smith if Lovie Smith's part of your long-term plans. Lovie Smith was honestly a continuation of the staff. That staff last year was very similar to the staff 2 years ago. The only difference was you promoted Lovie Smith and you took away David Culley because David Culley was so incompetent and you didn't want to say that you could give a second year to David Culley. The plan all along was for that staff to last 2 years, to be the two-year bridge staff, to sit through all of the bad football, the rebuild, trading away bad contracts, loading up on draft picks. And then this was always the plan in year three, to go out and get the coach that you want, start building a real football team and try to position yourself to be a playoff team. This has always been the plan. Like, the plan is that's where it's supposed to be. Do you agree with every move he's made along the way? No, you can't. I understand that. That's why I don't see Nick Caserio leaving. That's why I don't see the Texans firing Caserio now as opposed to when they hired DeMeco Ryans. It doesn't make any sense to me. Todd says, I don't want to encourage this topic, but I'll say this. Maybe Caserio loves control and sees that he won't have it with DeMeco in the building. Caserio hates the idea of not making the picks, would be my guess. Here's the thing. If he resigns, where is he going to make the picks? Where is he getting control?
And was he going to go back to New England where he never had any control?
Right. You're taking a demotion. You're now going to be, for lack of a better word, an assistant general manager. You're going to be like director of player personnel. This is the only spot he could be the GM. If he leaves on May 1st, does Nick Caserio get another GM job in his career?
No.
There you go. No. So like why? What's the motive for Caserio to leave?
Unless they're the ones pushing him out.
See, I don't, but I just don't see that. Well, I really
so
don't.
We'll add in here. So Mike Silver, I'm not a fan. He did tweet out. He responded to it. He quote tweeted a Pro Football Talk story about Caserio going to back to New England. And Mike Silver said, to further flesh out the rumor, the talk is that the 49ers assistant GM, Adam Peters, will be targeted to replace Caserio. Now, this kind of goes back to the Nick Caserio press conference where he was like, if the new coach don't want me, I know I might have to step aside. What is also interesting, though, is that some of these reports have been about a reshuffling of the front office.
Lombardi said a reshuffle.
So,
which doesn't mean Caserio's fired.
So Caserio, could he move into the VP of football ops role that I don't think they replaced because was technically Jack Easterby? And the GM position is now open. Like, could there be a path in which Nick Caserio is still part of the Texans organization going forward? And this new GM, maybe this guy from the 49ers, is the new general manager.
Absolutely, yes.
Because that's what the Ravens did, right? Ozzie Newsome is still a member of the Baltimore Ravens organization. He might be officially retired now, but initially, he didn't just retire. He moved into a different role within the Ravens organization, and then their new GM stepped in after.
Yeah, I could see that. That makes more sense to me than Caserio leaving.
If that's what the end game of this all this stuff is, that's fine.
I think it's a win.
I think that would be
because
a win too.
I don't think Caserio ultimately, like, who has final say of the fifth, like of the transactions? You think it'd be Caserio? Do you think it'd be the new guy, Adam Peters? Because I still think Caserio would help out. Like, Caserio's a football junkie. Like, Nick Caserio is going to be helpful in that organization. But I don't see, like, a clash between the Texans and Caserio. I don't see any sort of clash between DeMeco and Caserio. I understand DeMeco wanting, like, his, like, guy in the front office, like, a voice that he knows and he's comfortable with in the front office. I totally understand that. But I also don't think that there's any bad blood between Caserio and the Texans. I don't think there's bad blood between Caserio and DeMeco. I don't think the Texans want to move on from Nick Caserio. I think that's a great theory because you're right. Lombardi said there's going to be some shuffling within the Texans front office. Not that it's going to be that Nick Caserio is gone or fired or resigned. Reshuffling of the deck. That to me makes a lot of sense. You give Nick Caserio, not that he deserves it, a little bit of a bump up, but in reality, it's so you Adam Peters can come in, be the general manager that DeMeco wants to have in the front office. That's the smartest thing you've ever said. I think it's very logical. Like, to me, it makes a ton of sense. It makes a lot of sense. DeMeco gets what he wants. He gets his friend in the front office.
Yep.
The Texans don't want to fire Caserio. They love Nick Caserio. You give him a bump up. Nick Caserio doesn't want to leave because even if he craves power and craves control, okay, where's he getting it from?
Well, he still would have more power
and
control in the Texans organization than if he went back to New England.
Absolutely.
Because, like, you're never going to usurp the power from Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
That guy knows all, does all. He is the start and the final say. Like, everything goes through Belichick's office. Where here, You could have a three-person team.
Unless...
Go ahead. Unless they fire Bill Belichick.
Yes.
Which,
and then you have Caserio and Mayo.
That stuff has been floated out there.
Unless they move on from Belichick after this year.
That Robert Kraft has told the Patriots and told Bill Belichick, if you don't make the playoffs, you're out.
Because he already has his heir apparent coach.
Which would be so wild.
He already has his heir apparent at the head coach position. Gerard Mayo is going to be the next head coach of the New England Patriots. They, you know, he stayed there. They gave him the associate title. They gave him a big contract to stay there. If Bill Belichick's gone, Mayo's not doing the player personnel. Mayo's not going to be the general manager. So you're bringing in a Caserio to be that general manager in waiting. Like, that's the only theory that makes sense from a Caserio wanting to leave point of view. The theory that you laid out makes a lot of sense, too, where you give him a bump up in promotion. You bring in a San Francisco 49er, you know, executive that D'Amico Ryans wants there. That, to me, makes a lot of sense, too. But I don't believe there's any sort of, like disdain and toxic behavior going on or bad culture with the Texans, Caserio, D'Amico, and that whole triangle.
Do you believe that the Patriots would bring back Nick Caserio with Bill O'Brien back in the building?
Why not?
Well, he fired Bill. Like, I'm just asking, like, would... Oh, no, he didn't fire Bill.
He was brought in that year after.
That's right.
They reshuffled.
Right. Yeah,
so
timeline.
O'Brien was gone, week four that
so
year before?
So many changes.
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't... was Easterby. Okay. Easterby was like your acting GM, and then Easterby went out and got Caserio. Right. Yeah, so no, they never overlapped.
No, he was the general manager for 12 weeks.
Ridiculous.
It's... Yeah, so then it makes sense, but...
Let's entertain this for a second. If D'Amico's the one making the picks...
ESPN.
That's ESPN 975, ESPN 925. If D'Amico's the one making the picks for the Texans, mm-hmm. do you think it changes how the Texans will select players?
No. No, I do not think that. Because I think that they at least they know together where they're heading. And look, I was listening to Dan
Jeremy. Who? Who is they?
Nick Caserio and D'Amico. Because even if Nick Caserio is staying, whether he's staying or not, I was listening to Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks' podcast yesterday.
Yeah.
And what they said was that if Bryce Young was there at 2, there would be a celebration in the room.
Sure.
That they love Bryce Young. And, you know, they talked about what Lance has been saying here on 97.5 and how there might be some concern within the organization about working with David Mulugeta again.
Mm-hmm.
And now Bryce Young is now connected to David Mulugeta and Athletes First, but he's not his agent like Mulugeta represents Stroud. And that might be one of the reasons why they're not sure about C.J. Stroud and taking him at 2. So if it's all in on Bryce Young, to me, I think we're starting to see a clearer picture that the Texans know what they're doing with their draft, and it doesn't matter who's making the decision, is it's Bryce Young or Will Anderson. I really am starting to get to the point where I feel like that's where we're headed.
Okay. What do you make of the theory that Caserio would quit because they're not taking who he suggests as their pick?
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't...
Because, why would you keep that job?
If you're Nick?
Yeah, is it better to try to, you know, go back to the Patriots or a different organization, rebuild that trust, and get a GM job down the road, and be like, look, I wanted C.J. Stroud. They wouldn't take him, so I left.
Hmm.
And if you're Nick Caserio, and you leave, and you were right, then you'll get another job.
I don't know.
Because you can go into any interview and be like, why did you leave Houston? I want Stroud. Look, he's leading. He won a Super Bowl with the Indianapolis Colts.
And then you can say,
I was right.
Yeah, but he also hired Cully and Lovey.
Yeah, he'll have a hard time answering for those.
I think the only way he gets a GM job is, again.
Is if it's the Patriots?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the only way he leaves.
I mean, look, Brian
I think
Game,
it's the only way he leaves on May 1st.
A lot of people thought Brian Game would eventually get a job again.
Yeah.
He's not even the assistant GM in Buffalo yet.
Yeah.
And he went back there.
9820, I'm calling BS also, but if Ryan's is going to make the picks, I have no problem with it because he was around the 49ers when they were making picks. A little different being the DC for 1 year, you know, defensive coach for other years, and seeing the draft versus running a draft. Like, who's making the calls? Hey, we want to trade up to number 3. Who's calling?
I have a big problem, actually, with what Daniel Jeremiah said, actually, about that Bryce Young stuff.
All right, let's sit down on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. Are you buying this Caserio could be gone stuff? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Inform-
informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Joe George in for Joel Blank, Charles Carter in for Joe George. I'm still Branham. What's this beef that you have with the Bryce Young stuff?
All right, so this is my issue. If what Dan Jeremiah said yesterday on his podcast was true, that the Houston Texans would celebrate and be cheering, jumping for joy if they got Bryce Young.
I know where you're going with this.
But they're not so sure about the next guy or what they're going to do. Then Nick Caserio failed as a GM, and he should have gone and got his guy. Because if you firmly believe that strongly in Bryce Young over C.J. Stroud, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, and you're now not going to take a quarterback, and you believe that there's a franchise quarterback in this draft, and you could have got him with the first pick, then you should have traded up with the Chicago Bears and given up the 12th pick and gotten him. Because if you believe he's a franchise quarterback, he's worth it. So you can't, like, unless you love Will Anderson and it's a consolation prize, but if you believe Bryce is a franchise guy, you should have gone and gotten him.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense how you could pass on Bryce Young when you could have gotten him.
Well, they're not passing on Bryce Young.
No, but you could. But you could have traded up for him.
Right. It would have been a lot. It would have been a lot.
It would have been worth it. If he's a franchise quarterback, if you believe Bryce Young is a Super Bowl winning quarterback, then he's worth whatever they wanted.
If the Texans felt like he was worth it, they would have done it. Like, it's that simple. They would have done it if they felt like he was worth it. They didn't do it. They feel like he's not worth it. I think the Texans could trade up to number one right now. They haven't. Are they going to? If they don't, they're telling you that he's not worth it.
The only pushback on that is the one thing Ryan Pohl said that we talked about last week was that Nick Caserio was getting, like, nervous. And I think Caserio didn't want to do the trade now.
I think that was, I don't.
I think he wanted to wait.
Like, I don't think it was fair for Ryan Poles to say that he was acting nervous.
Yeah, you're right. That's probably not. But I wonder if the Bears have the first pick on the 27th and the clock starts, if this scenario plays out differently, if the Texans make the trade then, because it was early on. It's early in the evaluation process.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what if there's, you trade up for the first pick. Bryce Young just did his top 30 visit yesterday. Before the combine, all this stuff. You know, what if there's a medical red flag? You traded up for the first pick, so I get why you don't do the trade then. But if you really believed he was that guy, then you should have gone and gotten him. And if the Carolina Panthers don't believe that, and they do believe there's more than one quarterback, then you should trade up now. If you believe he's a franchise quarterback, go get your dude.
I think a lot of times whenever we look at the draft, and especially where the Texans are in terms of their organization, where they haven't been good in the last few years, it hasn't been that long for them not to have a franchise quarterback. You know, Deshaun was a franchise quarterback. It seems like an eternity, but it really wasn't that long ago.
It does feel like a lifetime ago.
It feels like a long time ago. And, of course, nowadays in the NFL, you got to get that franchise quarterback to feel like you have a shot, like you have to have a chance. A lot, because of where the Texans are, a lot of times we see – we look at NFL drafts and we lump just positions together. Like, whenever you said, well, if the Texans love Bryce Young, they should go up and get him. If they don't believe in C.J. Stroud, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, they should just go up to get them. I think what you're doing there, and this is a very common amongst fans, especially fans for teams who need quarterback, is that they put blinders on to the other positions. Like, well, if you believe in Bryce Young, but you don't believe in Stroud, Richardson, and Levis, you should be moving hell, like you should be moving heaven and earth to trade up and get Bryce Young. But what if the Texans are looking at it from a big board perspective, not just isolating at the quarterbacks in a vacuum? It's every single player in this draft, and they're looking at their big board, and they see two generational talents.
That's fair.
They see Bryce Young, generational quarterback, and they see Will Anderson, generational edge rusher. So from a Texans point of view, where everybody's saying, quarterback, 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 the Texans are like, we don't care who goes one, because we know we're getting one of two players that we absolutely love.
That's 110% fair. But then you just... please don't take a quarterback. Like, if you don't believe in the other guy, then don't take him. If you really, if it was Bryce Young or bust for the quarterback position, then you have to take Will Anderson. It's not the right decision to move forward as a franchise with a quarterback you don't believe in, because then you're just wasting your time. Now, do I think you can go into the 2023 season with Case Keenum and Davis Mills as the top two quarterbacks on your roster? No. Is it probably the best decision if you don't take a quarterback at this point? Yeah.
Like, I think that they have a plan. And I know it's hope, whatever. But, like, I a lot of times, I kind of get labeled this anti-quarterback at two perspective, where I'm really not anti-quarterback at two. Like, if the Texans took Bryce Young, I would be over the moon. I'd be really happy. If the Texans shock the world and take Will Levis at two, I'll be over the moon. I'll be really happy because I do believe
in
Will Levis. And I will be the only one. I'm fine with that. I'm not anti-quarterback. I'm pro BPA. Like, I am pro take the best player that is there. And I think that's what the Texans are telling you right now. The Texans weren't the team that traded to number one, even though reportedly they love Bryce Young. They weren't Carolina that traded with Chicago up to number one. They weren't the team, at least to this point. You know, a lot can change between now and April 27th. We're 2 weeks away from the first round of the NFL draft. They haven't, and I don't think they're going to be the team that flip-flops from two to one because of Bryce Young. I firmly believe that the Houston Texans love two players in this draft. They view two players as generational talents. I think all the writing's on the wall because they didn't trade to one with Chicago. They weren't that team, even though they had those conversations. They reportedly love Bryce Young. But if they reportedly love Bryce Young, but they're comfortable at number two, what does that tell you? It tells you there's a second player in this draft that they're in love with.
Yeah.
And personally, I think it's Will Anderson.
And that's I'd be fine with that, especially with the defensive coach, whether you had a defensive coach or not. You take the people that you believe are the best players available, and if they take Will Anderson, it clearly shows that they don't believe in C.J. Stroud or Levis or Richardson. But how about the side of it of if it's a Mula Geta thing? How do you feel about that? Like, it's like this Scott Boras stuff that's out there, mostly from fans and uneducated people, when they're like, Carlos Correa won't be back with the Astros because he's a Scott Boras client, before forgetting that Jose Altuve is also, and so is Lance McCullers, a Scott Boras client.
Bregman is now too, I think.
Yeah, but that's before the contract. Yeah. So the next contract would be with Boras. But the idea of passing on a franchise quarterback because he's represented by the same people that represented Deshaun Watson makes you feel what? Because I don't know the answer. I get where they're coming from if there's personal vendettas and personal issues with both sides.
I would understand it. But I also don't think there's beef there.
But like, what happens like if Caleb Williams then and Drake May are also represented by David Mula Geta? Like, are you just going to keep passing on franchise quarterbacks potentially? And what about everyone else in the draft?
Well, here's where I stand on the Mula Geta stuff. I don't believe that there's bad blood between Casario and Mula Geta. There might be bad blood between the organization.
The McNairs.
And the McNairs and Mula Geta.
Yeah.
But I think that Casario actually did a pretty good job of like managing the situation. Like, they worked together.
If Nick Casario wanted to, he could have said, we're trading Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
And if you want to deny it because you have a no trade clause, then he's just going to play here in Houston and we'll pay him millions and millions of dollars to sit on the bench and never play. And that's fine. Instead, he let a player under contract be a free agent and discuss his future with multiple teams. And then when he chose his team, he traded him. They could have traded him to the Atlanta Falcons for a better trade package that included like a guy like A.J. Terrell and got a real franchise cornerback. They passed on that and allowed Deshaun Watson to do whatever he wanted.
I also don't think that it's so much a Mula Geta versus ownership thing.
Yeah.
I think it was way more Watson versus... I think there were so many fronts happening there that we, one, weren't aware of. But one, I think Cal ticked off Deshaun Watson whenever they had him for dinner and they're like, hey, who do you want us to interview? And they didn't listen to him. That was stupid. Like, if you're not going to listen to him, don't ask for his advice.
Yeah.
I thought that was stupid from a football point of view.
That's a big mistake.
But I also think Deshaun Watson saw what was about to happen. Like, he saw like what was about to come down. Like, maybe not in terms of like all of the, you know, the court stuff, the allegations, all of that. But you know the back channels there, what he was like, the text messages, the DMs, all these people talking about, we're going to take you to court. Like, this is going to get bad for you. I think he was trying to run away from that.
I mean,
quite frankly,
he was supposed to be here on Monday.
Yeah, right.
But they canceled the deposition.
But I think a lot of Deshaun Watson demanding a trade, I think partially it was because the McNairs didn't listen to him about, you know, head coach, general manager. I also think a large part of it was he was trying to run away from his demons.
Yeah.
He was trying to run away for a lot of the problems that he had in Houston.
And I think Jack...
And trying to cover it up.
And I personally think Jack Easterby played a big part in it. You know, when you go back to 2020, when Sports Illustrated wrote a couple of Deshaun Watson stories, or Jack Easterby stories, there's a couple things in there that are really strange. And one of them is that Jack Easterby was paying to have certain players followed. Now, I have jumped to the conclusions that Jack Easterby had Deshaun Watson followed. It's my personal opinion. There's no facts behind it. But, like, when you look at these articles that were written about Jack Easterby, calling someone's mother and saying they're concerned about that player's action and having a player followed, and then all this Deshaun Watson stuff happens after, like, to me, like, I think those articles were written about what Jack Easterby and the way he was treating Deshaun Watson.
But Easterby was also hooking up the rooms with the Houstonian.
I know.
So
I know. But like it's I just the Jack stuff versus Deshaun seemed very real. And he was the one that was part of the thing about the baby mamas with DeAndre Hopkins, him and Bill O'Brien, and why they wanted to trade DeAndre Hopkins because his quote baby mamas were around the practice facility, even though that was before Deshaun signed his contract.
What a
but like it's just I don't think they would not work with David Mulugeta because you can't operate as a franchise like that to close sure. off a client base.
But if you I could see it to break a tie though because like even the Jalen Ramsey stuff, like the Jalen Ramsey, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with a player like backing up the Brinks truck demanding a trade from Jacksonville. So like I would have it's probably not quite a red flag, but if I viewed a Mulugeta client as like my third best player in the draft and I had this player right here that was like also the third best player in the draft or I gave him the same grade, I would use it to break a tie, certainly.
From a player's perspective, David Mulugeta is probably the best agent in the NFL right now.
Uh-huh.
From a ownership and GM perspective, he's probably your least favorite because he has successfully forced multiple trades after getting big contracts. I mean, look, he just did it again with Jalen Ramsey. Mm-hmm. The Rams just won a Super Bowl, and he got him traded again. If Deshaun Watson in 2 years wants out of Cleveland, I guarantee you David Mulugeta will let it happen. Yeah. That's why, to me, the Bears did not, like, they moved early. Because they are anticipating, if they don't treat Justin Fields with kid gloves, that David Mulugeta, if he plays well, will force a trade because this guy might be the most powerful agent in sports right now.
Yeah, I would avoid that if I could. I really would avoid that if I could. Now, if it's like a slam dunk, you have to pick this guy, like absolutely. But I also think there's some other things with C.J. Stroud that are concerning. The S2 like score that we're hearing about, that's concerning. How his numbers against pressure in college football, concerning. This like report, I've never been on the Stroud train.
Michael Lombardi, when he was going on all these tangents about Casario, dropped one in there about how C.J. Stroud is appearing uncoachable.
Yeah, I saw that one too.
To organizations. Yeah. That he is going to basically tell a Bobby Slowick that I know more than you.
Yeah, that's like the problem.
The reputation he's given himself so far.
I don't think he's going to go on the top. I don't think the Texans are going to pick him. I really don't. I think there's a better chance the Panthers pick Stroud than the Texans pick Stroud. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. The Cardinals have got calls from half a dozen teams about the number 3 pick. How would you move up from 12 to 3? Would you be interested in moving up from 12 to 3? And how much draft capital would you be comfortable giving up? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Something that you need in your lives. Look, the basketball playoffs are here. Well, at least the play-in games. Our playoffs are right around the corner. So basketball is a big conversation right now. Last month was March. Basketball, always a big deal, especially in the state of Texas. If you're looking for a basketball goal, you got to get the best basketball goal on the market. And of course, that is a basketball goal from Pro Dunk. Highest quality goals that you can find, unlike anything else that you'll get at the the big box stores. They have a tempered glass backboard, which gives you a true, authentic feel. You miss a jumper, you miss a jumper like you would in a college arena or a pro arena. It's also got that tempered glass backboard that gives you a true feel when you're laying it off the glass. It gives you that feel, pro feel that you'll find in all of these arenas. Breakaway rim, thick steel pole, stainless steel hardware. It's height adjustable, 5 feet all the way up to 10 feet. Lower down to 5 feet, throw down some jams. Have a little slam dunk competition, raise it up to 10 feet, work on your shot. Have your kids play basketball too. Have them work on their shots. Also, their accessories are next level. LED light kits for night play. We know it gets hot in our city. We know that your kids have school. We know that you have work. Well, get these LED light kits for night play so you can use that goal from Pro Dunk at night. Backstop nets as well keeps you from having to chase the basketball everywhere, pole pad lettering, lots more. You can order everything, including professional installation online at ProDunk.com. Yes, the pros at Pro Dunk will professionally install your goal. You don't have to worry about screwing it up. You don't have to worry about messing it up. Your wife or kids don't have to yell at you because it was your fault. No, the pros will install at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't lift a finger. Let the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops do all of the work for you. Call right now, 801-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
Covered. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Charles Carter filling in behind the glass. That Charles 3 on air. Doing a great job. Much better than we normally get. Joe great. George Radio at George George Radio filling in for Blankers. Blankers out this week. I'm still at Jeremy Branham. The Cardinals have been getting calls for the number 3 pick. This is with all of the quarterback movement. If there's a good chance that all these quarterbacks go like in the top 5. And a lot of people think that obviously the Panthers are going to take quarterback. There's some thought that the Texans will be taking quarterback if it's Bryce Young. Seems like a guarantee. If it's not Bryce Young, there's kind of maybe a coin flip right now as to who goes number 2. But the Cardinals, who are selecting number 3, would be a prime spot for if somebody loves an Anthony Richardson, if somebody loves a Will Levis, if the Texans go Will Anderson. Maybe that drives up the price of number 3 because somebody loves C.J. Stroud. So the Cardinals are sitting in a pretty good position at number 3. Everybody's been calling them, talking about what it would take to move up to number 3. Here is Ian Rappaport talking about the Texans potentially moving up to number 3.
And then if the Texans want to double up and just take 2 of the best players in the draft, going from 12 to 3 would be expensive. But if they thought there was enough value in the player, would be something they might consider as well.
There you go. So I think that's kind of a nothing burger. Like, it's kind of like, yeah, the Texans might consider it as well. Like, it doesn't seem like
he doesn't even say they've called.
No, he doesn't.
And people are spinning it all over social media like that they've, I'm looking at a Twitter poll right now, that the Texans have called about the number 3 pick. He does not say that. Now, maybe he's inferring that, and I think that's likely what he is doing. It's an interesting idea of trading from 12 to 3 if you love C.J. Stroud or Will Anderson that much, and you want to get both of them. Or maybe it's double Alabama. Stroud goes 1, you take Young and Anderson 2 and 3. Like, there's a lot you could. It's not the craziest idea. I mean, honestly, it would be awesome.
I think if they trade up, it's for Levis or Richardson, quite frankly.
So you think it's to take Anderson at 2, and then they go up and acquire.
But it doesn't even matter who you take it to, right? Like, it depends on when you.
But why would you have to go that high? I guess because you think someone else is going to trade up to 3?
Yeah, you're just guaranteeing which of the 3 quarterbacks you like the most. Sure. Now, it doesn't really matter who goes 2 or 3. It kind of depends on when you make the trade.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you made this trade before. Now, I don't know why Arizona would make the trade before they're on the clock. It would be interesting, though, if the Texans go. It'd be interesting if the Texans trade up to number 3, and then they draft Will Anderson 2, then trade up to get a quarterback at 3, as opposed to why didn't you take the quarterback at 2 and then trade up for Will Anderson at 3? Because you could argue that the cost for the number 3 pick would actually be slightly cheaper if there's one less quarterback on the board.
Yes. Also, doesn't it feel more likely? Like, I mean, maybe Nick Caserio, if he's smart, if he's good at his job, then he should have already been doing this. He should, if he wants to trade up to acquire Will Anderson and try to double dip here, he also should be calling a team like the Seattle Seahawks. Of maybe Mel Kiper's mock draft is right, and quarterbacks go 1 through 4, and Will Anderson is available at 5. Like, are the Seahawks willing to trade from 5 to 12? And is that pick available? So there's a bunch of different scenarios that they should be working through. But if you believe in a quarterback and you want Will Anderson, then I have no problem with this.
I have a hard time believing that the Texans take Will Anderson and then trade up to number 3 for a quarterback. It just seems backwards to me. Now, maybe Will Anderson at 2 and then you trade at 5 for a quarterback. That makes a little bit more sense. It'd be awkward to take Will Anderson and then you trade with Arizona for number 3 and then you take a quarterback.
Yeah.
It doesn't really fit for like my point of view. Now, if you know you're going to go that route, to me, you take the quarterback at 2 and then you trade up to number 3 for Will Anderson.
Yep.
Because I think the price of poker is a little bit, now not much cheaper, but a little bit cheaper if there's 2 quarterbacks on the board versus 3 quarterbacks on the board. Now, this sounds fun. This sounds awesome, right? Oh, the Texans can get 2 really good draft prospects. They can get Will Anderson, the best defensive player on the board that doesn't have character concerns and red flags. They can get their quarterback. The question becomes the price, though. Like, what would be the price for the Texans to trade up from 12 to number 3? Quite frankly, I think it'd be similar to what Carolina had to give to move up to number 1. I think it would be that expensive. Now, maybe eliminate the player aspect of it, but the Bears traded the Panthers traded to the Bears the 9 pick, a second-round pick this year, a 24 first, and a 25 second. I think that's about the cost it would take for the Texans to move up from 12 to 3.
That's a lot. So 12, but the advantage is for the Texans organization is that unlike the Panthers, you have excess draft capital.
You do.
So if it was 12 and the Cleveland pick, I'm assuming is what you would want to include.
Yeah, but they might hold you hostage.
To be your own pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there is a risk there with the Cleveland pick because Cleveland really could be anywhere in the draft next year. They could be a playoff team. And they could easily miss again next year. The AFC is so good.
But is the Cleveland low end, like worst case scenario for 12? The Browns?
Yeah. Like, is it 12 again?
I was going to ask, is the Browns low end season worse than the Texans best case season?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think the Browns lose less than the worst. I think the Browns can fall next year is like 7-10.
Oh, yeah. I guess
I don't see the Texans getting there. Like the Browns low end win total, I think, is 7 games.
Yeah.
The Texans high end win total, let's just be optimistic homers for a second, like 3-7, and say 7 wins.
So like it's at best. It's,
yeah.
But so what's more likely is the Texans are closer to between 4 and 6 wins. And the Browns are between 8 and 11.
Yeah.
Like, I think those are, like, the realistic ranges for these two franchises going into the next season.
The short way of saying this is the Browns pick would be the less valuable of the two for the other teams that you're talking about trading that pick. Ryan Wilson, who does mock draft stuff for CBS Sports, he actually projected a trade for the Texans. He said the Texans would trade down, but I just pulled it for the price of what it would cost. Ryan Wilson has the Texans moving from number 2 to number 11. The Texans would get the number 11 pick, 2024 first, 2024 third, 2025 first, 2025 fourth rounder. So if you just like look at that from a like trading up from number 12 to number 3, the Texans would be trading 2 future first, a third and a fourth to move from 12 to 3. That's expensive.
That's really where if you have to believe that this is your franchise guy. Like you have to really.
But if you're that's
really
the point
believe.
Though. Like if you really believe that, you're taking him at 2.
Yes. Unless going back to your big board argument is that they love Bryce Young and Will Anderson. And if Bryce is there at 2 and you take him at 2 and you also want to get Will Anderson, then you go get your guys, it's a lot. But like if you believe there are two franchise-changing players in this draft, one on each side of the ball, you have the draft capital to go get it and still have a first-rounder next year. Yes, it's not as high. It sounds insane, but to me, it's worth the risk if you're getting Bryce Young. I think that's my caveat.
I think like that's what I was about to say. Like I think that has to be the combination for it to happen.
Is Young
where
and Anderson.
Stroud goes 1, you get the quarterback you love in Bryce Young, and then you also get the only other tier 1 player on your board, Will Anderson. I think that's the only scenario it happens. Because if it's Levis or Richardson, I think you trade to 5 or 6.
Yeah.
You don't trade all the way up to 3.
There's also a 0% chance you allow the Tennessee Titans to take a franchise quarterback, Ryan Wilson.
I don't believe in that. I think it's a loser's mentality when you're worried about other teams in your division.
I would agree most times. This is the one I don't.
If you're walking into the draft next 2 weeks from now, April 27th, and you're like, okay, what are we going to do to make sure the Colts and the Titans screw up? What are you doing? If that's all of a sudden your priority, no. You need to fix your house. You need to worry about your house and no one else's. Be so good at what you do that it doesn't matter who you're lining up against.
But now, if you're trading that pick to Tennessee, you think you just bent them over.
You need to think you screwed them, and because, they did. This is a screw
if you
job.
Because you think C.J. Stroud's not good.
Right.
And you just traded them C.J. Stroud, essentially.
Or you just have the trade was just ridiculous. Like when you look at draft value charts and things like that. Yeah, screw them over. That's fine. But I hate the defeated attitude, the loser's attitude. Oh, we got to be scared of what the Colts or the Titans much do. Who am I picking on?
You call me a loser, basically.
I said it's a loser's mentality. When you're worried about teams in your division and you're not worried about yourself, that's a loser's mentality.
All right.
713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. The Rockets, they really haven't accomplished anything since Tillman took over, right? I disagree. Does this bother anyone? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One thing that you need to get accomplished is a home remodel. You're probably like me. You've been thinking about a home remodel. Well, I have the name that you need to know. Pinnacle Construction, and it's the right time to do it. You might have kids at the house, so you want to get this remodel done before the summer, right? That way you can enjoy it when the kids are at home. Whether you just want something fresh, whether you're creating a new look, be it at the kitchen, be it the bathroom, be it a room addition. You've been thinking about that. I know you have, but you've been waiting for the right people, someone that you can trust and not charge you through the roof. Pinnacle Construction is the name you need to know. They're a general contractor with decades of experience that will help with any kind of repair. Are you choosing a team to remodel your home? Yeah, you probably are. I know that can be confusing. We'll allow the talented team at Pinnacle Construction to ease that confusion. Doug Johnson, owner of Pinnacle Construction, native Houstonian, serving all of the greater Houston area. Doug and his team guarantees quality in-house work, and they're here to stay. Licensed and insured. Stellar customer service for every project and every customer. Get your free estimates with a qualified Pinnacle Construction technician right now. You can call or text this number, 281-900-3004, 281-900-3004. You can email Doug, doug@pinnacleconstructionllc.net, or you can just head to 975generalcontractor.com. Financing options are available. Ask for the ESPN discount. Pinnacle Construction, born and building in Texas with over 20 years of general contracting experience.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned into the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Still haven't heard back on my bet offer, $1,000 bet offer that I've counter-proposed to Cody. No silly games and fetishes. Talking about my feet last week, which is weird. Yeah, I haven't heard. I haven't heard back. I might leave a note for his seat. Check yes or no. See if he'll...
Oh, like back to like the middle school days?
Yeah. It's like country western song. And talk about girls and beer and trucks.
Yep.
I think it's a language that Cody can relate to. I haven't heard back. Cody has a little over 5 hours to accept this bet. $1,000, Will Levis. We'll see if he accepts. He has until 7 o'clock today. We'll hold it in escrow. You don't think I'll pay? We'll hold it in escrow. I'll give Joe my $1,000. You give Joe your $1,000, and then hope Joe doesn't run off with it and pays the winner at the end of the day.
Say, we're going to Vegas, Charles.
Who's Charles?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's my plan the whole time.
I take the money and run.
Yeah. That would leave me in a bad spot.
Yeah.
The Commanders have been purchased.
They have.
Was it $6 billion?
Apparently, it's at the 1 yard line. So it's
pardon the pun.
It's happening.
It's the Magic Johnson Group.
Yeah.
So 76ers owner guy.
Yeah, Josh Harris. He's the co-owner of the 76ers. He and his group that includes Magic Johnson are going to buy the Commanders for $6 billion.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. A
lot of money. I was rooting for Tillman to get it. I also kind of selfishly didn't want Tillman to get it because now does the tension like go away? I personally don't think so. I wanted him to get it, but he didn't get it. What was your question?
How do you feel about that?
How do you feel about it?
Like the Rockets have done a lot of nothing, in my opinion.
I disagree.
During his ownership time.
I think they've went through a rebuild, and they've built a young nucleus that's ready to win.
There's been a lot of stuff out there about luxury taxes and how they're going to handle that going forward, how they handled it when he first took over the team, making sure that those penalties didn't occur, and if he wants to be under them or not. And now we can't really see it again until they start spending money, which I get why they're not right now. But originally when Harden and Westbrook were on the team, there's definitely stuff out there about, is Tillman Fertitta willing to go over the luxury tax? And now it's that question's out there, and he is capping his bid for the Commanders at $5.6 billion. It's odd to me.
Well, I think he probably has. I mean, he sets a number, and he's not willing to cross that number. Like, that's most businessmen.
But like,
it reminds me of that episode of Succession.
This is a selfish thing. Do you want, as a Rockets fan, do you want the owner of the franchise now basically not caring about your franchise anymore because he's not going to. The reality is, if he would have bought the Commanders, that's priority 1A, B, C, D, then come the restaurants, then come the Rockets. Because eventually when he would resell it, it'd be worth, it's going to be worth like $20 billion.
I don't want my owner meddling anyways, though. Like, it wouldn't bother me at all if he bought the Commanders. It wouldn't bother me if he does. Like, I don't want my owner meddling in decisions. So if he bought the Commanders, cool. Like, I don't want him meddling in Rockets decisions either. Like, I want an owner who hires really good people and then gets out of their way.
Yes, but this is where everyone, where you grow up, it changes your perspective on things. But like, when I look at what this idea would be, this is what I see in Chicago. Like, this is what I see. Jerry Reinsdorf built a championship level team in the Chicago Bulls, and then it's all he focused on. And he let his son, even though I don't like them, run a terrible organization when he focused on the White Sox.
Mm.
When he let Michael Reinsdorf take over the day-to-day operation of the Chicago Bulls, they were a disaster. And they were for a majority of the time. And look, they're celebrating a play-in win last night. And like, because Michael Reinsdorf is the one who's ran that organization into the ground. And now Jerry has not exactly done well with the White Sox. But like, it's the same thing of what that leads to is Tillman running the Commanders and one of his children who did not earn that wealth. Same thing with Cal McNair. It's not a Fertitta thing. I don't believe the children should just be handed a franchise. It's just not how it works. It's not how I think it should work. But like, it's not Tillman running the Rockets. It's someone else that didn't purchase the team. That's what I don't like about it.
Yeah, see, it wouldn't bother me. Now, you can't have people that are incompetent running it. Like, that is true. Like, you need to hire people that you feel confident in. That's how I want my owners to be anyways. Like, if you look at, I think the best organization in this city are the Astros. Like, how much does Jim Crane meddle? Some people would say he meddles quite a bit.
Yeah, that's why Reed Ryan doesn't work here anymore. Because Jim's son's going to eventually took over that department.
Did you finish reading Winning Fixes Everything?
Not yet.
That was more of a Jeff Luhnow thing. Jeff Luhnow hated Reed Ryan.
I thought Reed was after Jeff got fired.
No, not at all.
Oh, was it right before?
So Jeff,
was that summer of 2019?
There's a story. I don't remember the timeline on this, but absolutely they crossed paths because it talks about how much Jeff did not like Reed.
No, I thought I can't remember. For some reason, I thought Reed got fired or moved on from the organization after Hinch and Luhnow got whacked.
No.
Okay.
No, Reed was gone before that all happened.
Okay.
The next president or whatever was Jim Crane's son, but have you heard of that being an issue? Have you heard of that being a problem?
No, it's just a philosophical thing that I think when you look at most organizations in all sports, that when the elder statesman that made the money and purchased the team hands it off to their children, it doesn't go well. It's why we call Cal Tommy Boy. It's what I'm talking about with Michael Reinsdorf. It's, you know, you see it in organizations throughout of that, like, not many teams are the Rooney family.
I don't think he had to hand it off yet, though. Like, you can oversee it as the owner and hire really good, like, team presidents, all of that stuff, and be just fine. And Tillman, you know, being a self-made billionaire, I think would figure out a way and be just fine. I also think Patrick Fertitta is brilliant. So I don't think it'd be a problem if they did that. But if you go back to funny story with the Luhnow Reed Ryan stuff, like, Reed Ryan, like, got involved a lot more than Luhnow wanted. And Luhnow was kind of secretive and guarded about everything. He was kind of weaselly. Honestly, he was kind of a snake.
It really seems like this book is like the final nail in Jeff Luhnow's coffin.
Yeah, he's never going to be a general manager. But they didn't like Reed Ryan. There's something like something got him like sideways. Like he said, I think it was because he was going to Crane about Luhnow. And Luhnow was like, what are you doing, dude? So like Luhnow didn't like him for that. And he also thought he was kind of loose-lipped and like gossiped and talked a lot. So one time they made a trade. And he told Reed Ryan on purpose a name in the trade that wasn't in the trade just to see if it got leaked out. Got leaked out.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
No, got leaked out. So that like doesn't surprise me. They one didn't bit. Like each other.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to really. I mean, Crane obviously has final say, but Luhnow had a hand in that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, Luhnow seems to not get along with anyone.
Yeah, it seems like everybody hated him. Even
but
people
does
that
Tillman
work for
now
him.
Focus on a hockey team? We kind of got that question on the text line.
Do you want hockey in Houston?
I don't think it'll work.
I would like to have it in Houston selfishly because I think I enjoy hockey. I don't watch much of it on TV because I don't have a rooting interest.
Yeah.
I'll watch playoffs sometimes. I love going to hockey games, though. They're awesome. They're a lot of fun. So selfishly, I would like to see it happen. I realistically don't think it's going to. And I tend to agree with you. I don't think it would.
I don't know if it works. And there's really the main thing is that if a hockey team were to come here, I think they missed their boat because I don't want a dumpster fire of an organization just being relocated here.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked a fresh start, and they just expanded by two teams. They're not going to add another team. I don't want the Phoenix Coyotes.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't want the Edmonton Oilers.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Every Thursday at 2, it's the worst takes of the week. Who made the list this week? Bad Take Boulevard with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.